Hello, everybody. Let me just make sure my sound is good. You guys let me know, confirm that you can hear me, please. And we're going to go ahead and dive in. I'm so excited about today's call. This is the live Q&A with Karen Koenig of Words to Eat By. So we have been reading her book for June Book Study, and now we get to bring her on. So I'm already seeing her raise her hand. Let me just quickly change my name. And then I will bring you right up. So glad you guys can hear me, and I'm so excited to have you guys here. Okay, let me go ahead and bring you up, Karen. I think I already saw your hand up. Okay. You guys welcome Karen Koenig. I know several of you guys have been reading her book this month and having aha after aha. Let's just see if we can get her video and sound on. There you are.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to the No BS community. We are so excited to have you today.
Very excited to be here.
I'm Coach Yesenia. I'm one of the weight loss coaches inside the membership, and I have had the great pleasure of leading a book study this month with your newest book. And we are just so excited to have you today and get to ask you all the questions and hear from you about the book. Before we dive in, though, I mean, could you just give us a quick introduction of who you are and, just why you decided to write this book?
Sure. I'm delighted to be here and I welcome all questions, either about this book, other books, my recovery from dysregulated eating. Pardon the pun, I'm an open book about it. So I really welcome all questions. I'm 74 and I'm over half a lifetime recovered from binge eating, chronic dieting, restriction. About a year and a half of bulimia. And now I am what I consider a normal eater, normal by, eat when, mostly when I'm hungry, follow cravings, mindful eating, really, enjoy myself, stop when I'm full and satisfied. I have a practice in Sarasota, Florida. I'm a blogger, a writer. I do some online podcasts. I do some workshops. What else can tell you? I love Sarasota, Florida. It's a great place to live. It's a little hot today, but that's about it.
Yeah. How long would you say you've been a normal eater, Karen?
Well, about 35 years. So, I went from, really chronic dieting to terrible binging. I always said to my clients, there's nothing you can tell me that you're ashamed of that I did not do. I could eat seriously an entire frozen apple pie. I could eat a box of donuts, a quart of ice cream. I ate food in the garbage can after a party. Always finished my food on my plate, but then I would diet. You all know what that's like. So it's wonderful to be a normal eater and not to think about weight and eating. I don't focus on weight at all. I focus on health because the minute you start focusing on wealth, on dieting and weight loss, you've got the train backwards. You've got the caboose leading the locomotive eating, and the weight and the good health follow.
Yeah, and that's why we love your book so much, because we're Even though it's a weight loss membership, we focus so much on the mental weight coming off first. And so I think that's why a lot of the members really resonated with your book. Somebody in the comments said, it's not just words to eat by, it's words to live by.
Well, that's true, true.
Would you say that those trash thoughts that you call them, do they still pop up for you as someone who's been a normal eater for, 20, 30 years now?
In some ways, I was talking to a client earlier, and I mentioned I have developed all of a sudden last fall, early winter, enormous amount of food sensitivities. I had, you know, I was tested and I have a lot of them. So it's been a bit of a trial. For instance, I can't eat vegetables. I can't eat salads. And I love them. Ironically now, I can eat cheesecake. I can eat ice cream. I'm not sensitive to those. So at first, I felt that deprivation come up. Oh, it's not fair. I can't eat these things. And I said, well, no, wait a minute. That's a junk thought. I can. Can I live with what follows? No. So occasionally it does come up, but you know, after all these years of practice, I know what a trash from a treasure thought is. So they do go away. I mean, in terms of our brains, the neural pathways grow by focusing on them. And the less you focus on something, more your neural pathways disappear, and then you've got a new habit, and that's what you focus on.
So a lot of them do go away, but not all of them, right? Sometimes you're still sorting them out in your brain. Oh, that's a junk thought. Oh, that's a treasure thought.
You're not. But I was talking to a client about, she said, we're perfectly imperfect and we're imperfectly perfect. And I said, yeah, you know, that's what makes us not machines. Oh, great. So we're going to have those thoughts. And it's not like thoughts stop coming, but they come with less intensity and less frequency. I always say, it's not like you brush your teeth once, you're like, okay, I'm done now. Don't need to do that for the rest of my life. But you manage to remind yourself to brush your teeth. So, I mean, I guess I don't want people to think, oh, well, she's got it all down. No, it's perfect. That's not the goal.
You've gotten good at brushing your teeth. Yeah, maintaining your thinking.
For health. And knowing this comes, your teeth get dirty. You know, you do something with them. You either ignore that or you say, yeah, time to brush my teeth. So the goal is never to be perfect. And dysregulated eaters, you know, they are so prone towards wanting to be perfect, do things right, very focused on doing things right. It's just to feel fine about yourself wherever you are on the eating disorder recovery journey. You're fine.
Yeah, so the key is to let go of thinking you need to be perfect. It's just being fine with where you are now.
Right. I mean, that isn't the goal. The goal is to not be perfect because you can't be. So why would you try to be something you can't be? And we don't like people who are kind of perfect. There's a saying, we bond in the trenches. I mean, think of who your friends are. Do you talk about all the wonderful things you do well? Uh-uh. You talk about, oh, you wouldn't believe this awful thing happened, right?
Yeah.
We bond with our imperfections, with our faults. And so it's just getting them in balance. And again, feeling you are just always okay. Because you're human.
Yeah, that's great. I do have a few things I want to discuss with you in the book, and then we'll open it up to questions. So if anybody listening, if you have a question, make sure you raise your hand in a minute, or we have the Q&A box that you can submit your question to. Before we move on to taking questions from the members, I do want to, like, as a coach, you know, I work with several clients, we work inside the membership, and just reading the book and some of the things that you wrote about, it just made me think of some of the common things that I see. One of the common things that I see is when one of our ladies starts to hear their self-talk for the first time and they realize how negative it is, how junky it is, what do you suggest to someone who's just starting to hear their self-talk for the first time and they realize, like, I thought I was a positive person and maybe I'm not, because just listen to all the terrible things I'm saying to myself every day.
Well, you know, here's the irony of it. So people start to listen when I say listen for their self-talk. Then they go, oh, I have some. Then they start to listen to it. Oh, that's terrible. That in itself is self-talk, right? So then you've got the self-talk about the self-talk. And then you say to yourself, oh, I'm terrible for judging myself. And then you've got the third layer.
You've got a triple-decker sandwich of negative self-talk.
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah. And so I think, you know, it's important to take a deep breath, be curious, not judgmental. Gee, I wonder why I said that. Or, you know, who says that in my family? Oh, mom. Oh, dad. Whoever it is. And to just know that this has been adaptive, and that's why you do it. And can change your behavior. It's was adaptive at some point. Now it's maladaptive. You can change your behavior. And you always want to be looking forward. I always describe clients are like this. Yeah. We're always looking behind them, but I didn't do this right. Or, oh, well, I tried this before and that didn't work out. It's like they're haunted. So yeah. It's looking forward and saying, I can manage my thoughts. I can manage my self-talk. It's, you know, it's doable.
Exactly. Exactly. I love that. You also talk in the book about probably my favorite concept. I circled it when I saw it. I was like, oh my gosh, I love this word. And you talk about frustration tolerance. Can you tell us what is frustration tolerance and how do you build that skill of frustration tolerance?
Well, I'm so glad you labeled it as a skill. You know, there's an old marshmallow test. I don't know if you know about that, where toddlers are given marshmallows and they're told, we'll give you two. Well, we're going to leave the room and we'll give you two if you don't eat one. So some of the kids eat the marshmallow right away and other kids don't. And they find that the kids who had the most frustration tolerance grew up to be people who we might look at, I don't like this word, but I'm going to use it now, who have self-control and self-discipline. So it's learned in childhood. It is the ability to tolerate being frustrated, that it's just a passing state on the way to success. And so it's important to think about where would you have learned that? I happen to have had two parents, very fortunately, who were very good at tolerating frustration, one more than the other. So I grew up pretty much with the ability to do that. Look at your role models. Now, how did your parents do? Did they scream and yell? Did they have to have a drink? Did they walk around slamming doors? Or could they just say, okay, you know, I'm going to sit with this and find a better way to do it? Self-soothe, that's such a key. Calm yourself down. The other thing that goes with frustration tolerance is delaying gratification, which means you don't have to have it this minute. Either get the pain now and the good stuff later, or get the good stuff now and the pain later. You always have that choice. And if you can delay gratification, you can say, no, I can sit with this for now because I'm going to be so proud of myself.
Yeah. In the membership, we talk a lot about sitting with an urge when we get that urge to eat, you know, for an emotional reason. And if you can just teach your brain to wait 2 minutes, 5 minutes, it's such an important skill. And it seems like it ties in with that frustration tolerance for when we maybe mess up or we fail or something, like just knowing that it's okay, but you keep going.
Yeah. You know, I don't even call them messing up. I call them missteps.
Missteps.
Like you kind of accidentally did the wrong thing. Oops, I did a misstep. Because that's really what it is. I'm really very big on words. And I
agree.
Pain in the neck with it.
I agree. I do the same thing with my clients. I'm like, nope.
Yeah, right.
Let's not describe it that way. The way you're describing it isn't helpful. All right. So you heard her, lady. So there are missteps.
Missteps, yes. And so, I mean, this is kind of funny. I have a whole lot in my book about words like should, have to, need to. And clients say it so often, and I would correct them and interrupt their train of thought. So a client says, well, why don't you make a sign? So I did. So this is what I do. So when they say, you need to stop eating so much, I say, what? Bring it in. Need is external. Need is that pressure poking you.
Yeah.
Want is I desire to be healthy and eat differently. And when it comes from inside, it pulls you forward.
Yes, I love that. Okay. And then like one more big question that I had, and this is something, again, we've seen it inside of the membership. I see it a lot with the private clients that I coach, and it's, you know, with the pandemic and everything that happened around COVID, so many people, I mean, just trying to cope, you know, they turned to food or they turned back to food. They either, you know, worked on losing some weight or, you know, creating some positive habits. And then with everything that happened, all of these uncertain times, they just really struggled. And so what would you say to someone who's battling so much shame or, you know, struggling so hard with the fact that, you know, they got through the pandemic, but they came out heavier. They came out, you know, with so much more emotional eating, and they're just struggling with that.
Well, you know, shame, you're either shame-based, kind of growing up, or you're pride-based. And many dysregulated eaters have that predisposition to be shame-based. Mm. You know, it's kind of like the glass half full, half empty thing. I mean, it almost feels genetic sometimes. You know, some people are just, they're so perky. They're like, oh, I didn't die in the pandemic. And other people will say, oh, I'm so bad. I lost, you know, I gained 10 pounds or I hate the way I ate. So a lot of it comes from before, you know, was your family shame-based, or did they look at the positive? Did they look at the negative? Were you shamed a lot? Did they shame each other? Did your parents walk around, or, you know, whoever raised you, modeling, you know, I'm a terrible person? And if so, we're just going to pick that up. And then if we got shamed, it's worse. So it's kind of the long way around to your question, which is deciding that shame has a purpose. And it's, I did something that it's kind of questionable. Okay, let me think about that. Overeating is not a crime. It's not a felony. It's not a sin. It's an adaptive behavior. So I would say to somebody, what if you weren't ashamed of it? How would you wrap your mind around a different view? And usually they get to, well, I guess I could accept. Okay, and then what? And I could be curious, maybe figure out how I can change. Okay. You know, again, it's that looking forward. The shame base is almost always backwards.
Yeah. How else could I look at it? And just getting to acceptance. I love that.
Well, and acceptance, and this is, you know, what clients will often complain about when I say accept. Excuse me. They'll accept doesn't mean I don't want to change. It's holding two things. I am okay with who I am, and I want to be better. Mm. You know, it's kind of like, why is that so difficult? You are responsible for yourself to an extent, although we don't grow up in a playing field by any means in this culture or probably any culture. So we've got genetics, we've got neighborhood, we've got people who raised us, schools, everything else, politics, religion. But you can still say, you know, I am okay as I am, and I want to be different.
Yeah.
And that's you know, it's a nice combination.
Yeah. Isn't it so funny that when we talk to ourselves in this, you know, just unhelpful, like, just we can be really mean to ourselves and critical and judgy. And for some reason, that seems to come along so easily. We believe it. But when we try to, you know, talk to ourselves in a kind way, in a helpful way, for some reason, like, I see this a lot, like, oh, I don't know if I can believe that. That just seems like I'm coddling myself. What do you tell clients who struggle with that?
Well, again, you know, where did you learn that that's coddling? Who says? I do think it has a lot to do with upbringing. I'm sort of a funny story. My husband's family, quite upbeat. So we used to live in Boston, and my sister-in-law was supposed to go on a cruise, and she and her husband had planned it for a long time, and I don't know, there was some hurricane. So I said, oh, I'm so sorry that you're not going to be able to go. And she said, that's okay. I'll get to see spring in Massachusetts. Now, in a million years, I would not have come up with that, right? Most of us would be pissed.
Yeah.
Oh, disappointed. So again, I think it goes back to a great extent to upbringing. And what did the people around you say when things didn't go well? Were they positive and look at the bright side? Or did they blame themselves? So that stuff is really learned early, and our culture is, you know, it's really awful. No pain, no gain, and just say no and be hard on yourself. Ugh. So we can't forget culture and religion. Religion is very bad, critical. So it's listening
that
to
your
things.
Brain is broken. It's just that, but this is what it heard growing up, and now we've just got to redirect it a little bit, give it some more helpful direction.
Well, and I think choosing a different direction. You know, really looking at how you learn these things, saying these people who raised me, they did the best they could, you know, not blaming them. And even though it was the best, it wasn't always useful. And now I'm going to choose who I want to be and how I want to relate to my body and food and the world. And then it becomes a real intentional choice. This is what I want for me.
Yeah. That's perfect. When they just said, how do you rise above your raising, how you were raised? And I think you just answered that. You choose it. And like you said, they did the best that they could with what they knew, with how they were raised.
Right, right. But it's not a contradiction. It really is a choice. It doesn't mean we don't love people who raised us. We don't value them. And yet, how can we believe everything that they did was right? You know, I often say to a client, you know, how many people are in your immediate household? So 5, you know, or 7 or 12. So you based your entire life on this handful of people. There's over 7 billion people in the world. Do you really think this handful is a predictor? If you were raised with a different handful, I'll say to clients, so if you were raised across the street from you or in the next apartment over, would you be the same? And they're all, no. You know, we have that power to be different. And it feels great.
We have that power to be different. I love that. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and open it up to questions. I already see one raised hand. So if anybody's interested in asking Karen Koenig a question, go ahead and raise your hand. And for now, I'm going to bring up Jennifer and get her question answered.
Great.
I'm excited to see what questions we get. Okay. Let's see. Let's see if Zoom will cooperate here. Might have popped out. Let me see.
I saw it and then it disappeared.
Okay. So I'm seeing Kimberly raise her hand. Jennifer, just try raising your hand again if that was you that dropped out. Okay, let's bring up Kimberly. Let's try, because sometimes Zoom is a little.
It's not perfect.
It's not perfect.
But it's pretty darn good.
It really is. Okay, let's try Kimberly. There you are. Let's see if we can get her video on. That was quick. Hello, Kimberly. Welcome. What's your question?
That was very quick. Like, laying on my couch, my hair was in a messy bun.
You look great.
Okay. Wait, oh my goodness. Let me just slap my cheeks to get the right shade of rouge. No, just kidding. okay, let's hide. Okay. And then, of course, my cat is going to come. Yeah. I have a question. I wrote it in the Q&A. What triggered the question was the thing about eating normal, something of my definition, my new definition of normal. Because of the, not because of the pandemic, I'm right now wearing a monitor. I'm trying to cover it now, a heart monitor. I have some health issues and it's because of my weight. It's all obesity, weight related, and I'm beating myself up because I had the gastric sleeve in 2013 and I didn't do the right thing. And I have gained almost 100 pounds back. And I haven't read the book yet, I just heard about it. But it's just naturally just trying to say, because of the gastric sleeve, I know I'm not going to, I feel as I'm not going to eat normal ever again, because you feel the restrictions so quickly anyway, you know? So I think I'm just having issues with that because I feel as though I've had it. I'm punishing myself now because I failed at it. And, you know, I'm just going back and forth with that. And so, it's like so many things going on in my head, and this slip knot is still killing me. It's like so distracting. And then also I know I'm getting older, like I'm next year I'm going to be 50. So I'm trying to leave certain things my mother used to say in the past, like not getting with the old shitties. But again, the author said something about what your parents used to say. Like my mother used to be like, well, look at your arms when I was gaining weight. And then yesterday my husband and I were looking at pictures of ourselves.
Let me just ask. So if you have one question for me.
Okay. Yes, I know. I'm going on a tangent. Sorry. My question to you is, being with the gastric sleeve, what would you say what would normal eating look like to that person? Like, how would you assist someone with a gastric sleeve to look what normal eating would look like for them?
Let me ask you this. Are you in a group, a support, like a post-bypass support group or anything like that?
Yes, I am. But it seems as though those women are doing great. It just, when I go in there, I get triggered like, oh my goodness, I am failing, because everyone on that group is doing so. Are we allowed to curse? I don't know if we're allowed to curse, but I'm just going to.
You can curse in front of me.
They are doing fucking fantastic. I'm happy for these heifers. Don't get me wrong. They're not heifers. I'm happy for these girls. Don't get me wrong. But I'm just like, what are they doing? I don't know what they're doing, but they're doing great. Not me.
So, why do you think you're not doing great? That would be my question, right, Karen? Why do you think you're not doing great?
From Yesenia, I learned from you. It goes back to the basics, you know, the fear of failing. Or I listened to some of your work, and I know that, like I said, I have lost weight in the past, but I wasn't surrounded with the right people around. So I was surrounded with people who are jealous, and you know, they're like, oh, let's see what happens. And it was like a lonely world, losing the weight. But now, and then I didn't have any faith in that. I suffered from low self-esteem. But it's just a whole new barrage of things.
All right, so here's what I want to know. When you are where you want to be health-wise, what would that self say to you right now? If they're like, she just got right up next to you and she whispered in your ear, and she kept whispering in your ear, that self you want to be, what would she say to you?
Well, I think that the old me would say the one that I was when I was 100 pounds lighter.
I want to hear the you who's going to be healthy. There's no old you.
Oh.
The one who has not, who is evolving to be there. And she's there. And she's coming back, right, to give you some advice to get there. What would she whisper in your ear? What would she say?
I think she's just gonna.
It's in there. Come on.
I think she's gonna say bitch is gonna be okay. It's
gonna be okay. Keep at it. Don't be hard on yourself. Every day, be happy with who you are. You can still want to be different, but there's nothing wrong with you as you are. She would be really kind and compassionate, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
So that's what eating disorders teach us, how to be kind and compassionate. Do you think you could do that more?
I'm trying, but you know, this last stint, especially being in the hospital and with the doctors, let me hear it.
This is how I do therapy with people. I'm going to jump in. I want to hear you say something very kind and compassionate about yourself. This is the key. If you want the way out, this is it. I'm offering it to you.
Something kind of compassionate about myself.
About your eating, about how you keep trying and trying, about the kind of person you are.
Okay. Kind of compassionate about myself. To myself, you're saying?
Say it to us. I knew it was in there.
It's in there. No matter how much weight I gain, I still refuse to wear holy loungewear. I spent over $400 today buying sexy skin stuff.
I'm dressing the way I want. I'm trying. I'm doing my best. That's what you want to keep saying. The stuff that you tell yourself, it sounds like if I said that to myself, it would bring me down. So you can say uplifting, kind, soothing things to yourself and still want to change. But it makes the moment so much better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't take away your desire to change. It just makes you feel better. Okay. Can you say one other kind thing? Or compassionate thing about yourself? Just so I know you got it.
All right, okay. I'm happy that even though I don't like the way I look up, it's coming.
Okay.
I'm with me, sis. I'm with you. Even though I hate the way I look in pictures, I'm happy to take pictures of my kids playing. So that they have memories like mommy, I'm on the floor, even though sometimes I have to roll around like a dog to get on the floor and roll up. My husband has to help me back up off the floor. That's neither here nor there. But I'm on the floor playing with the kids and they have those memories and I have the memories too.
And I'm a good mother and I'm trying my hardest with my kids to show them love.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good thinking to be had here, I think, that you're just not seeing yet.
Okay. Thank you so much.
It's really putting the effort into listening to yourself. If we had recording this and you listen to yourself, you'd pick out all the negative things.
Yeah. There will be a recording, so she'll get to listen back.
Yeah. I hope that you do. And then replace those things with kindness. You can be kind to yourself. And still grow and change.
Okay.
Thank you so much for that question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kimberly. Okay. Next up, we have Michelle. Let's bring her up for her question. That's a great question. There she is.
It worked.
Yeah, you're here. Welcome.
Thank you so much. And I just wanted to say thank you because this book has been amazing. I haven't made it all the way through yet. I wanted to be done by the call. And I have one comment and then one question. So your sentence in there about how I never meant to hurt myself has been life-changing. Like, I had to put the book down. And I like keep going back. It's like a little puppy going back to her mother. So thank you for whatever inspiration brought that forward. And then my question for you is what do you see as the relationship between shame and trauma and food? Okay. And the negative spirals that so many of us get into. And I feel like there's something there. And I haven't put my finger on it yet. And I was just looking for your insight.
High correlation between trauma and eating disorders, or, you know, any like substance abuse disorders. It's a high, early trauma can dysregulate your nervous system. And, you know, food works pretty well for that. And, you know, when we're traumatized, we usually feel it's our fault. I mean, so I'm just speaking in generality. So there you have the shame. The people who've traumatized us, they don't take any of the shame. It's our fault. So then we walk around carrying their shit, pardon my French, right? That's, you know, a general answer, you know, but trauma, here's something for all of you to go on the website, Rapid Resolution Therapy, John Connolly. He is brilliant. And he talks about trauma is not the event, it's the meaning you made of the event. I want to say that again. It's not the event, it's the meaning you gave to it. So you can change the meaning so that it's less traumatic now. You know, that you're a survivor, you're not a victim, because here you are.
Yes, and here we call that a lot, we call it rewriting the story.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Because it's not fact, it's not truth. It is a story we tell ourselves. This happened to me. So, and also recognizing the trauma is not happening anymore. The brain is reacting as if it is. It's still responding to certain things that are similar. So to be able to say, and I work a lot with clients on this, this is, you know, there's a difference between recall and reality. It's your memory. It's not happening. It's your memory getting triggered. So being able to soothe that and say, okay, again, facing forward, not backward. I don't think any of my books are really go into trauma this way, but Rapid Resolution Therapy, they have a YouTube channel. You'll get the gist of it. It's really fabulous for trauma resolution.
Yeah. Thank you. That's super, super helpful. And, you know, like the difference between recall and reality is, my guess is it's something that a lot of us work on.
All of us do.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's all of us. Our memories, fear memories are stored to be easily accessible. So they generalize, oh, this is similar to what happened to me, but you know, a lot of times we had these memories and we were young, so we didn't know what else to do with them. But now we can defuse them and realize nothing's happening. We're safe now. You know, John Connolly says, and I have it here as a quote because I use it a lot, the worse it was, the better it is. Hmm. Right? So you're free and you're safe now.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks for that
question.
Okay. That was really good. Next up, okay. I'm not sure if this is the same Jennifer, but I'm going to go ahead and bring her up. Next up, we have Carol Ann. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi.
Well, hi. Yeah, I had a question. How can I build some of my self-acceptance?
Well, again, that's a choice. So if you had to make up, let me ask you first. So what does acceptance mean to you?
I mean, just being comfortable with myself and where I'm at. I have that false fallacy that, you know, if I don't accept, if I accept myself as I am now, I'm not going to get further.
I mean, that's like saying, you know, let's get rid of all the railroads in this country because there weren't airplanes. That's how we traveled. You know, mm-hmm. Those of us who, you know, I came up in the middle of the beginning of TV. Now there are cell phones. We're not going to get rid of all the TVs. It's good enough and you want to do better. Can you hold both of those? Mm-hmm. That's what you want. They go together. They're meant to go together. So let me hear you say that. You know, I'm doing the best I can and I want to do better.
I'm doing the best I can and I want to do better.
So is
it feels so really strange to say that, though.
Well, yeah, you've been, you know, kicking yourself in the butt for years and decades, which is the same thing that I did. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to decide, how do you want to talk to yourself? How do you want to treat yourself?
You can. So treat yourself. Just that choice and that repetition of saying, yeah, this is what I, you know.
Yes. Yes. It doesn't mean the junk thought won't come back. Our bodies mm-hmm. love habits because habits are done with no energy, no extra energy. We do it the same way. And our mind bodies like that because then they could use the extra energy. We have 200,000-year-old brains. You know, it's like a mismatch to scan for threats. Well, there's not that many threats here. So we don't need to do that, but our bodies still love habits. They don't care if they're, quote, good or bad. So, good, we don't have to think about it. So that's why some of the old intrusive thoughts come along. And again, John Connolly says there's only one thing to ask when you have a thought. Is this useful to me right now? Usually we say, is this true or not? Not really relevant. You're in the middle of a meeting and you think to yourself, oh gosh, I overate last night. I mean, is that useful? Not really. So if you can always ask yourself, is this thought useful to me now? It's the best evaluative tool I can give you. And then again, it also saying, I made this choice on June 21st to accept myself as imperfect. Welcome to the club.
Thank you so much for your question, Jennifer. That's such a great question. Thank you. Okay.
Did that answer your question or help you? Done.
I think so. Maybe she'll pop up in the chat. I think so, though. And that is such a helpful thought. Like, I'm doing the best that I can and I want to do better. Maybe it does feel strange, but only because you haven't practiced that kind of thinking yet.
Well, only because we thought that we have to pick one or the other. Mm. I accept myself, I'm perfect, or I have so much, you know, to do to get to where I want. Whereas they really are quite compatible and they're two halves of a whole. I accept myself as I'm fine as I am as half, and I want to be better is the other half. They just join together.
I agree. I love that. Okay. Next up is Carol Ann. Let's see if we can bring her up. Let's see. In the meantime, we have someone in the Q&A ask, Lori says, what's the best way to learn to regulate your emotions? I eat to numb from feeling uncomfortable.
Well, here's my favorite quote, and I hope I can remember it so I don't have to go. It's on my bookshelf. R.D. Lang, who's a Scottish, I think, or British psychoanalyst. There is a great deal of pain in life, and perhaps the only pain we can avoid is the pain of trying to avoid pain. Mm. Right? We get to choose our pain. We don't get to not have it. So when we're uncomfortable, it could be from recall. So you might want to say, do I really have reason to be uncomfortable here? Is that just a memory? Or it could be because there's a good reason. So expanding your repertoire, sitting with the discomfort. You know, sometimes we want to sit with it. Sometimes we want to distract. There's not one thing to do. It's just information. I mean, when you get a text, you're like, oh, got to read this. You get a feeling of, you're not there to terrorize you. But if you've had trauma, it feels like that. Mm. So wading into the feeling, just saying, what is this telling me right now? I can bear this. It's information.
Yes. What information does this emotion want to give me versus run away from it? No, don't feel it.
Yes. You know, however, if you couple that with trauma, it's usually too much feeling for the situation. And if you had difficulty dealing with that feeling as a child or whenever trauma happened, you're going to be re-experiencing that rather than have the distance and say, oh yeah, that happened 20 years ago. I'm a different person now. Mm. So it's more complicated. I really recommend that anyone who has had trauma or even thinks they might have therapy. You know, I started therapy when I was 14. I begged my parents. They were shocked. You know, this was in the early 60s. That's really what it's for, to help you resolve trauma, move along so you can do better on your health goals.
Gotcha. Thank you. All right, so I brought up Julie. Carol Ann, I'm still seeing your hand up. Try lowering it and then raising it again and see if that helps, because it's not wanting to bring you up. But for now, we'll take Julie's question.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hi. I can just see you, Senya, so I was confused. First of all, I want to thank you so much for both of your books, The Rules to Normal Eating and this one. I highlighted more than I didn't highlight. My question is something you were talking about earlier with judging and shame and families teaching us that. I just recently visited my parents who live in a different state, and they're 87 and 83, and they are still judging themselves and others, and good and bad, but constantly, and to avoid feelings of shame that I think it was evident to me they eat or drink. Part of every time I visit them, I start seeing my progress actually through the No BS program. But my question to you is what you would recommend I focus on more of dealing with, trying to not continue history and to change what I learned as a child, or just focus. I don't know. What would you recommend I do in like starting today?
Okay. So I'm going to just turn things around. So if you were me and I were you, what would you tell me to do?
Yes.
I really am a believer. Not that I don't think, you know, quote, experts don't have a role in helping. I do. But I really think most people, there's a wise person inside, a wise woman, a wise man. So what would the wise person inside recommend that you do?
Observe my parents and see, that's why I do what I do. How interesting. And choose how I want to act and try really hard to start acting that way. Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, distance yourself emotionally from it. You can feel compassion for them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It can also increase your resolve to not be like them.
Yeah.
You know, you can feel badly for them.
Yeah.
And make choices that they haven't yet made. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But to focus more on yourself. Now, you know, there is only now. We keep thinking that the past is like a thing. It isn't. The past is over. Right. There is no past.
Mm-hmm.
We have memories mm-hmm. of the past. You know, the future isn't. And that's the other thing we haven't talked about is worries about the future.
Right.
All we have is the stuff that goes on in our heads. And to be kind to yourself and aware and stay focused on your goal.
And so when I find myself buffering and eating to avoid a feeling, and sometimes it happens so fast, it's not even until afterwards I think, I was irritated and mad at my husband and I found myself having a glass of wine or whatever, and I didn't even realize I still did that. I thought I didn't do that anymore. any recommendation in the moment, like how to catch myself before I go and grab that item? And
one of them is really asking yourself periodically during the day, what am I feeling? I'm fortunate that I'm a therapist and I've been for 30 some odd years.
Yeah.
Because you have to keep asking yourself, what are you feeling when you're with a client? So asking yourself and getting in the habit of doing that just in general. You know, you're waiting online in traffic, what am I feeling? Or mm-hmm. you're talking to a friend, what am I feeling now? So you become conversant with it and attuned to yourself. Usually those of us who aren't attuned to ourselves, our parents weren't attuned to us. So
right.
we don't necessarily learn the attunement. So you can teach yourself by asking yourself. And then there's a pretty easy chart. If you can say, when you have the urge for food, you can say, am I hungry? If yes, am I hungry enough to eat? If yes, what do I want?
Mm-hmm.
Flow chart. Let's go back to it. Urge to eat. Am I hungry? No. What am I feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Covered all the bases then. If it's food, so as soon as you have, mm-hmm. again, if you're attuned and you can feel there's some discomfort, label it. What is it that I'm feeling?
And then you have to be willing to feel that feeling. And that's a big deal.
Yes or no. I mean, I'm not big on, dwelling and, no, sometimes you just say, yeah, they're really pissing me off. Or, gosh, I'm so glad I'm not here living with my parents anymore. Or whatever it is. Or, you can feel it and acknowledge it and let it go. Sometimes you want to do something with it, but not, we don't have to attend to every feeling. You do want to acknowledge mm-hmm. it.
Right.
And not push it away. That's a shift for you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for stopping by. Bye now.
Yeah.
And other times we want to welcome it in and say, I was talking to a client who had to put her two dogs to sleep. And she kept saying, I feel so normal. I'm just crying and I'm sad and I'm relieved at the same time. She just took all those feelings in. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pass.
And we're not going to die from them. Yeah.
No. Because we are safe now. Because
right.
the triggers to those feelings happened when we were children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you're so, they make an impression. And mm-hmm. what one is the waves to come. I live in Sarasota, Florida. You know, waves to come should just wash it out so that there's no imprint left. That's the goal.
Right.
You have the memory, but not the emotional imprint with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes time, but you're right. Thank you. That really is
and
very
practice.
Helpful. Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Practice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for your question.
Thank you, Julie. Okay. I think we have time for one more. And I did see a really good question in the Q&A while I bring up Sonia. Looks like Sonia's next. So Mary in the Q&A says, why do I eat every night, ruining staying on plan all day, drinking my water? I've gained weight since joining in April. I have so much weight to lose. I feel I will never get this.
Okay, well, you can see me. You know, I guess I wish she talked to herself better. Again, I cannot stress, it is not about weight. If you have to choose between being kind to yourself or weighing less, guess what I would say? It would be being kind to yourself. That's forever, whatever weight you're at. So it's learning compassion. There's a great book by Kristen Neff, Self-Compassion. She's a person who didn't have compassion for herself and learned it. I have never met a dysregulated eater who had really healthy self-compassion, including myself, you know, before I really did a lot of work on myself. So making it about speaking kindly to yourself, self-soothing, caring about yourself now, and getting healthy.
Do you have anything, like, what do you say to anybody who struggles with eating at night? Just before we move on to Sonia's question.
Well, I mean, that's mostly when people do struggle, right? Sometimes it's because they didn't eat enough during the day, and our bodies will always win out. Yes, I mean, if they're hungry, they're going to want to eat. We sex and food are biological imperatives. Self-discipline doesn't work, self-control, none of that other stuff. For biological imperatives, they'll always win out. So one is not eating enough. Two is we're so busy, and then we're all stressed out, and there we are at home, just us and our feelings. So that's also a problem. I recommend people have a ritual at night. What are the things that you love to do? Do them at night. You know, read, I don't care, you know, what it is, binge on TV like I do. Do anything that's going to relax you. Start a new substitute ritual at night, and then habit will form over time. It takes about 88 days, last I read, 88 days to form a new habit. It might be 66, but at any rate, it's not going to happen.
It takes
tomorrow.
Process. All right. Thank you, Sonia. Welcome. What's your question, Karen?
Hi, Sonia.
I just want to say thank you so much for being here. It's chapter 3. One of the things you say that we should say to ourselves is, you never meant to hurt yourself with food.
Right.
And I think that resounded just so strongly with me, and I'm part of an accountability group. And we say, you know, we've been talking about it. And I know in the tribe, we talk in no BS, we talk about, you know, not having, you know, the negative thoughts and starting the positive self-talk. But how do we do that when we don't quite believe it yet?
You don't have to believe. You didn't believe the stuff you learned as children before you said it, or people said it to you all the time. The belief doesn't come till after. It's backwards. You fake it till you make it. You've all heard that. What you say is what you become. You're not, and then you believe it. So don't expect to believe it. Say it anyway. You have to lose. It's how you get to belief, by saying it over and over, just like you got to the silly, junky beliefs you have now. Believe them now because you said them, or they were sent to you over and over. So wait for the belief. That's the good stuff at the end.
The book is really good. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sonia. Okay. Okay, you guys. Thank you guys so much for coming. We had almost 300 women here tonight live, tuning in, and I'm sure we're going to have many, many more on the replay. Thank you so much again, Karen, for joining us tonight and for writing this book. I think clearly it's much needed in the world, and it's helping a lot of women already.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And thank you for the work that you do in the community that you've built. You know, we're moving in the same direction.
Exactly. That's what some of the ladies in the chat were saying, like, wow, like it's similar to a lot of the stuff that we do in here in OBS. It's not just focusing on weight loss or losing weight or what we're eating. It's how we're thinking about ourselves, how we're talking to ourselves, learning how to be kind to ourselves, right? And so it's beautiful work for sure that's needed in the world. I'm so grateful that we have it in the form of your work and Corinne's work. And I love it. I heard that we sold out your book on Amazon when we all went to go get it for our book club. And so that was fun to see. So ladies, if you love the book, make sure you go and leave a review on Amazon or wherever it is that you got it so that we can spread the work on this amazing book. And so that we can, I'm sure the next book you'll write, we'll have you back on again to talk about it.
Whatever it is, started soon.
Yes. Well, thank you so much again. And it was so lovely to have you.
Well, thank you. I totally enjoyed myself, and I hope I was helpful.
No, you really were. Thank you so much for all of your wisdom, Karen.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. You guys have a good night. Thank you so much for joining us on this call.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.